Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, as the party gets into full swing at Brands Hatch for the BSB celebrations of 2021, here in the commentary box following Argentina World Superbikes are Greg Haynes, that's me, and James Tozens, that's you, for Monday the 18th of October 2021. It's the Full Throttle Podcast, and what a weekend we've had. Let's start, first of all, very quickly on how we feel at this moment after that second race for World Superbikes. Unbelievable stuff.
Can I get confirmation, Greg? You are Partridge's son, aren't you?
I am Alan Partridge.
There needs to be a DNA test to be done here. We need to let Alan know.
We need to talk about Alan. Yeah, okay, fine. It's only because I mentioned Jack and Vera Duckworth on the telly today, isn't it?
How you shoehorn Jack and Vera into a World Supersport Championship winning performance, I'm not quite sure. But I'm
just in case I get sacked and this is my last podcast, it was lovely working with you.
Well, you know, you'd got salt and pepper, fish and chips, and you know what, you'd got quite a few other variations.
Ken and Deirdre.
Hey, are you going Coronation Street fan by any chance? Yeah, I was really impressed by that. I think that's been the best performance the whole weekend here in Argentina is you shoehorning Jack and Vera into commentary in the World Superbike.
It wasn't pre-planned. I don't really know where it came from, but that's the great thing about live television, isn't it? Where do we start? I mean, first of all, let's say, because we've had a significant championship won this weekend in racing in general, Taran McKenzie is the 2021 Bennetts British Superbike champion. Well done, Taran. Well done, Steve Rogers. Everyone at McCams Yamaha. Chris Anderson, the crew chief. I have to feel so sorry for Jason O'Halloran after the season he's put together, but the showdown is the showdown, and it's done exactly what MSVR like it to do, hasn't it? It's spiced it up, and what a finale we had.
Yeah, not to just go to lose first with Jason O'Halloran, but to go finish third. I mean, you just wouldn't have put anything on that, would you? Before the showdown started, what was he, nearly 100 points or about 100 points in the lead of the championship?
It was over. I can't quite remember the figure now, but it was over 100 points, yeah.
In a normal championship in World Superbikes.
Nothing's normal in life these days, is it?
He would have been crowned champion again with his performance that he is, but, you know, it is what it is. And that's taking nothing away at all from Taran McKenzie. 25 years ago, his dad was whizzing around on a Cadbury's Booster Yamaha YZF. And I was at the trackside as a teenager for the first time thinking, oh my God, I want to do this. And now McKenzie was one of my first heroes. Watching.
Really? So Neil McKenzie was, you could almost say, your inspiration?
Absolutely. Him and Whittam and Hislop, and Michael Rutter. Ian Simpson, you know, the list goes on. Jim Moody. It was a fantastic era of British superbike racing. And now McKenzie, you know, 3 times British superbike champion, Grand Prix star as well. Let's not forget, I think he was finishing in the top 6, top 5 of Grand Prix 500 racing as well.
Yeah, so yeah. In the 80s. I mean, it's a super competitive era.
Yeah, phenomenal. And 21 years ago, one of my biggest achievements in a particular race was Alton Park 2000, and I was on a Vimto Honda SP1, and I managed to beat Niall McKenzie around Alton Park, and he was on the GSC Ducati. He was teammates to Neil Hodgson, and I remember after the race, because I remember being a teenager looking at Niall McKenzie and being, you know, in awe, because he was a legend, you know, 3 championships on the trot, on the bounce. He was the man. And I remember after that race in 2000 for me, I was so, so chuffed and proud that I'd actually got the better of such a legend. He's an ambassador. And what he's gone through with his lads, you know, Taron and Taylor as well, he's just retired as well. And I want to wish Taylor all the very best with his future, because it's not easy going from being a racer to going into normal life. But he's a good kid, and I'm sure he's got a bright future ahead of him. But yeah, today it is all about Taron though, isn't it? You know, to win his first British Superbike Championship, and how much the Mackenzies have put into it, how much money, dedication, commitment, all the rest of it that you have to be the best in the UK at British Superbike level. It's not a small feat, and congratulations to all of them.
Well, we've got an absolutely packed podcast today. Plenty of interviews, insight here from JT as well. We're going to be hearing from Jonathan Rea, Toprak Razgatlioglu, Scott Redding, Dominic Agata, the new Supersport world champion, and almost the whole Mackenzie family at Brands Hatch as well. First of all, though, let's hear from Taz Mackenzie, the 2021 Bennetts British Superbike champion. And what better man to interview Taz straight after the race than the six-time champion himself, Shane Shakeyburn, live on Eurosport.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be down here with Taz. Taz, that's a rather nice helmet. Did you just win something?
You've got a few of these, I think, haven't you, Steve Clifford? It's always good getting something free out of Steve Clifford, so yeah, championship's even better. But honestly, I don't know what to say. I was in two minds the whole race. Whit made me nervous on the grid because I just had in my head I was going to win, and he said, oh, have you thought about this? And I thought, all I thought about was winning this race, nothing else. When Tommy was in front, I could see he was using his tyre. He kind of took off at the start, and I was just happy biding my time. And then I decided I was going to try and pass him because it started raining, and I didn't want the red flag to come out and me not be leading. But I wasn't setting that fast of a pace. I was kind of making a few mistakes. Then I had that massive moment out of Stirling's. And Tommy didn't even come by at that point. He came by a couple of laps later,
just I think. Because he was in the back of your bike.
and then I was thinking, right, Witt says, take the points. If I crash now, Tommy's riding strong at the moment. It might be hard to go and try and beat him in the next one. And then I kept telling myself, just be as close as possible. If he makes a mistake, I'm there and I'm going to capitalise on it. Into that last corner, he went tight, I went wide. As I turned in, I pushed the front, opening the throttle. I felt like I was driving into him, but yeah, managed to just get it underneath him and get the win. So honestly, I've got so many people to thank. I'm not even going to attempt to, but yeah, can't
you
believe
can
it.
You can do that after race three later on. That was a fantastic job. Great race, Taz. Well done,
thanks,
mate.
Shaky,
well
cheers. Done.
Absolutely superb. And a treble as well. What a way to win it, James. I mean, we've seen some trebles at Brands before for Shaky, for Josh Brooks, of course, but what a way to win the championship. We'll come back to the BSB paddock in a moment. Let's go to Supersport first of all, World Supersport that is, and we have a new world champion there. We'll hear from Dominic Agata in a second. Ten Carter back on top. Stephen Odendaal pushed him this year, but I think the right man won after the season he's had, considering he missed two races at Barcelona as well.
Yeah, he did. With the Moto E Championship, he's so very close, got to winning two world championships in 1 year. And that's not been done for decades, has it? You know, when you had the 250s and 350s and 500s. All racing in the one event kind of thing. And the 100 kilogram difference from a Moto E bike to an R and a Supersport bike to transfer your style and working for different teams, different nationalities as well. I'm sure the Dutch of the Ten Carter team, I'm not sure it'd be there's a lot of Spanish and Italian speaking teams in that Moto E Championship. So to go from relaying feedback on a 100 kilogram bike that's heavier than the Supersport, like I say, to an Italian or a Spanish guy or lady, to the Dutch guy, you know, Chris, he's chief engineer in Ten Carter. To go from that and still be competitive all the way through the two seasons was phenomenal, and I'm so pleased. He missed out on the Moto E Championship, didn't he? With enthusiastic efforts of
that's one way of putting it, desperate lunge
yes.
on Jordi Torres.
But I'm so chuffed for him that he has been crowned a world champion, because to get the chance of being a double world champion in 1 year and not to win either of them, a bit like we've seen Jason O'Halloran in British Superbikes, it would have been devastating that he didn't win at least one of them, and he did. So fantastic result for him.
Yeah, let's listen in then. The Dorna guys were very busy, as they always are, so efficient with the interviews at the end of the race this afternoon. And I'm sure as we record this out in the paddock, there's a hell of a party going on. And right into the night, we are in, of course, Argentina, the Cuyo region for the San Juan circuit. So, it's famous for its red wine. And I'm sure there's going to be beer, red wine, and who knows what else consumed later tonight. But this was Dominic Agata just a few minutes after the race.
Dominika Götter, third position for you today, and you are the 2021 World Supersport Champion. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's fantastic to finish the season in... the season is not finished, but we finish already now with the World Champion. Oh, I don't know what to say. I'm a little bit out of words, but... Yeah, it's nice to be on the podium and to be world champion. And just to say a big thanks to all the 10K team. They make a fantastic job today. The bike was better than yesterday. We was a little bit lucky on the first corner. I hope the other two riders are okay who crashed it. And we had a fantastic season. We had over 10 wins, many podium, and yeah, it's just an amazing season. And my rookie season finish first is very nice. And yeah, want to say thanks to all my sponsors like GX, RI, Daytona, Lanzanlike, Kreafeuer, Straubhaar, and all the others. They helped me to be here, and I hope tonight I can celebrate with some Argentina fans and with my team, and for sure we will have a big party tonight with some espresso.
Congratulations.
He's such a popular guy. How much is it going to mean, James, to the 10 Carter team as well, to Gerrit and Ronald and Kevin Boss? You know them so well, of course. Mm. They're back on top in World Supersport after 7 years of not winning. You know, they had the split with Honda, the loss of Nicky Hayden. They had to halve the team. The future was so uncertain. They're back and they're world champions again. It must be quite possibly the most special one so far.
The World Supersport Championship to Tenkate Racing is their baby. It's their bread and butter. It's what they started out with. It's where they cut their cloth in professional motorcycle racing at world championship level. And it's sensational, like I said before. It's 10 championships now that they've won in World Supersports with Dominic Agutter. We listed the names of riders from Christopher Mullen to Fabien Faure to Sofuoglu to
Charpentier,
Vandermark, Muggeridge,
Vermeulen.
Yeah, so...
Did you say Sofuoglu?
I did say,
yeah. I think we've got them all.
So it's, you know, to win 10 world championships obviously means... For 10 years, you know, you've been the best in the world. So to be that consistently good showcases just how good the team is.
And to have not won for 7 years, you know, they must have thought at one point, are we ever going to win one again? I mean...
And I think it not only 10 world championships for Tenkate?
Yeah.
With 8 different riders, right? Correct? Or 7 at least?
7, I think, isn't 7? It? Because Sofoglu won 2, Charpentier won 2... and obviously it's 11 in total with your superbike title in 2007. Yeah. So, it's 8. It's 8 different riders, isn't it?
There's a common denominator on success.
Yeah, yeah. And they've done it with not just Honda, but Yamaha now as well.
Again, it's a common denominator of success.
Yeah, yeah.
It ain't the riders. It ain't the team. It ain't the riders. It ain't the manufacturer. It's the team.
Yeah.
And,
They're top engine tuners as well, aren't they, James, for road bikes? I mean, the whole of that Benelux region, they are the go-to people, aren't they? Tenkate.
Well, they started my career. You know, my Mick Corrigan, 1997, when I rode the 600 there with the CB500, underneath my Mick Corrigan fairing was a Tenkate engine, I believe. And propelled my national championship.
That's so nice, isn't it? Sorry to butt in. Like that, it started with a Tenkate engine for you. How old were you then?
16.
16, and you ended up becoming a world superbike champion.
At 26, 10 years on.
Well, with Tenkate?
That's
years incredible.
On. Yeah, so I've got a lot of history with them, and I couldn't be more proud of Ronald and Garrett and Kirvin and everybody else that's working for them. They are completely dedicated to what they do. 10 world championships with Supersport and 1 superbike. And to feel that I am the only one that to have given them the superbike title. You know, Christopher Mullen got close in 2004, obviously, when I was battling with him with the Fila Ducati. But it's a beautiful thing. I feel very, very privileged that I gave them those emotions. Because winning the Supersport Championship's one thing, it is their baby kind of thing, but to win the Superbike is always the elite, isn't it? You know, and I remember what the party was like on Sunday night, and I'm sure that Dominic Agutter and everybody is celebrating just as hard, and I feel very jealous.
I mean, of all the places...
I've not been invited.
Of all the places for Agutter and for Tenkate as a combination... massive party animals as a team and a rider, of all the places to win it, Argentina.
Yeah,
you know, and with the COVID restrictions pretty much calmed down now, which I'm just laughing because we're watching our screens in the commentary box and Matt Roberts has just finished his highlights links. It's been a really long weekend for the whole crew over at Brands Hatch, of course, which is where the show's been coming out of this weekend. He's just finished his highlights links and he's doing a bit of a dance on the screen. Everyone works very hard at Eurosport, don't they? Most of the time.
There's an advantage. Yes, there is. There's an advantage to clinching a title in Argentina, though, Greg, and there's a disadvantage.
God. Oh, you've got to get a long flight back.
Oh, my God.
With jet lag and hungover.
If anybody's been fortunate enough to do a bit of travelling in their life and they've been on a flight over the 6-hour mark.
Hopefully they've got any sense. They've booked the flight for Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. Stay on for a holiday.
Absolutely. Because
I mean, 5 weeks till Indonesia. So
boarding a flight hungover, knowing it's more than 6 hours, is a torturous event.
Yeah. And you've done it more than once.
Yes, I have.
Can you just give us a bit of insight? Were you particularly ill on the flight?
I was miserable.
Was there any turbulence? Did you sleep or?
It's just miserable. You block out. You know, you literally block out. You know, you've got your head on your little tray that falls down,
yeah.
And you're trying to make that into the softest pillow that you've ever known in your
life.
Were
you in economy class or business, out of interest? Or a bit of both across your career, I guess.
All right, I was laid down in the bed.
There you go. Talk tray table like Dad. I thought, I've got to put you on the spot there. Because I knew all of you were wondering that back at home, and I certainly was as well. Yeah, I was laid down. I'm a layout bed. I just put my pajamas on. They just made the bed for me. I just finished my caviar.
You're world champion.
Well, to be fair, yeah. You probably did deserve business class, to be honest. But I bet it didn't make it any nicer, crikey. Anyway, let's get...
Don't call me out. Come on.
Sorry, James. Let's get into some... Actually, I'm not sorry at all. Let's get into some more interviews because our man Tristan Finocchiaro has been over at Brands, of course, commentating on some of the support classes. We had an incredible finale for Junior Superstock, Junior Supersport. We'll come to those riders in a moment. But actually, Tristan, who have you got first?
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, here with proud dad, Neil McKenzie. Good day for the McKenzie family.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's over, thankfully. I think the first emotion is relief. Just been, as it's been getting closer through the showdown and Taz has been getting stronger and stronger. But he didn't have a massive cushion, so I've been functioning on adrenaline for the last 2 or 3 weeks. But thankfully, it's over. I mean, he never really tells me what the plan is. He was out there obviously trying to win. He knew if he could win the second race, it was job done. He didn't want to take it to race three. It was a bit nip and tuck, and it turned out to be an epic last lap with him and Tommy passing each other numerous times over the closing laps, and they managing to get the job done. But spectacular. But it'll be a few days before it sinks in. But yeah, chuffed a bit. So he's put so much work into it. He's been so calm. He's driven the team. We're being relaxed and calm, and everyone else has been quite tense. But anyway, it's over now. He's done the job, and it's a massive piece of history for the McKenzie family.
Yeah, it's an incredible story as well. Obviously, you know, 25th anniversary of BSB this year. You won it 25 years ago, and now it's Taz's turn.
Yeah, I was obviously aware it was 25 years, but the whole thing of him winning it and me winning it all these years ago didn't really hit me till this weekend. And then, along with the TV coverage, you could see I was involved in that, and it was building up, and I realised just how special it was. So I'm terrible for not tempting fate. I tried hard not to think about it. I knew it was going to be a fairy tale if it all came together, but it just shows you, if you dare to dream, things can happen. Taz definitely was dreaming about it. Not the 25 years thing, but just winning the championship and everything that goes with it. I know he's been thinking about that for a long time, and it just proves that, yeah, he visualised it and made it happen.
Massive achievement, massive congratulations. What's next for Taz, if you can say?
Well, yeah, the Taz wants to go to World Superbike. There's one option with the Go 11 team, but that involves organising some finance to come with him, which is not ideal. And that's it, really. I mean, he thinks he wants to keep pushing on and go to the next level. That is the one opportunity that's there. Great team. If we can find a way to fund that somehow, then hopefully he's there. He's obviously got an option with Yamaha in the UK, but that won't be there forever. So next week, hopefully, we'll know what we're doing. So, but he's ready. He's in a great place with his riding and his career, and hopefully opportunities unfold.
Yeah, well, best of luck to Taran in the future, and thanks a lot for that.
All right, cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tristan. Well, Neil McKenzie, yeah, very emotional. We were watching some of the footage from here, weren't we, James? Neil in tears, and he tried so hard to fight them back, and then the floodgates opened. Ah. And they're the first, of course, they bookend, don't they? The quarter century of modern BSB is the first father-son champions.
Yeah, lad and dad champ.
Yeah.
And he did the triple back in, 789.
Yeah, keep going. No,
789?
No, first time.
678.
Yep, that's it.
Sorry now. 678. And then, obviously, Taz doing the triple at Brands.
Yeah. Wow,
You know,
and that's lovely as well, isn't it? Yeah. Three titles for Neil and then three wins for Taz. Title.
The double triple for the McKenzies. Yeah, it's just a lovely story. Because, you know, when you're in the paddock, it is a bit of a gypsy lifestyle. Everybody in that paddock, it's a way of life. It's not just an event at weekends that we all enjoy watching on TV. I can't underestimate and can't explain enough how what happens in between the races as well, how much work goes in, how much dedication, how much time and effort that everybody puts in, all the organization, all the production. You can imagine all the bikes and the tools and everything else that needs to get shipped around the world.
A lot of miles on motorways, you know, in the British paddock in particular, of course, it's all in one country. I mean, there might be, in time, we've had Mondello, of course, Assen every now and again, but mostly all on Scotland and England, up and down motorways. There's a lot of time on the road, away from family.
It is a paddock life, and they've dedicated their life. And fair play to Niall McKenzie, because, you know, he knows the downsides to motorcycle racing as well. You know, we've seen this year with the tragic losses of the three teenagers this year, it's been absolutely awful. And to have two sons, and Niall McKenzie would have had a period of time where he would have had a year where there were losses. And I can't imagine, because I'm not lucky enough to have children yet, but I can't imagine what it must be like to then get your kids involved in the sport that you love and so much, but know the risks so much. And to have all that burden on your shoulders, that you've been the one that's introduced your children to it, and then they love it so much as you did, they want to do it professionally, and then race at over 200 miles an hour on a superbike like Taran and Taylor do. I think that's why you're seeing the emotion in Niall and his mum's eyes, and the tears that have been flowing down his face is the relief that actually it was worth getting him involved in a way, but it must be turmoil for parents as emotions, seeing their kids flying around, especially like an ex-racer, like Niall McKenzie, like Ron Haslam with Leon, knowing the risks.
Well, we also had the national superstock title won at Brands Hatch, and Billy McConnell did all he could do by winning the race, but it was Tom Neave who secured the 2021 title. Congratulations, Tom Neave. And while we talk about actually junior superstock, let's go back to Tristan.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Here with Taylor McKenzie. Taylor, your final race in ever. Emotional one.
Yeah, it was a frustrating way to end, but I was chuffed to lead a lot of laps. And I think after Donington Park, anything was going to be an anticlimax after that. So really nice to start from pole position. I think watching Taz beforehand probably took my eye off the ball a bit. I wasn't expecting him to win the championship then. But no, I'm all in one piece. I can leave the gate tomorrow with my head held high and not too many broken bones and injuries.
So what's next for you then? Your dad tells me you've got a couple of options in a couple of other areas.
Yeah, I don't really know what I'm going to do, to be honest. But I mean, this time of year is quiet for bike races anyway. I normally have November and December off. So just going to take a bit of time. Obviously enjoy Taz's championship win with him. And yeah, I don't know. I'll still be about the paddocks. I'll probably just carry on winging it like I have for the last 15 years. I'll wing it somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I can imagine it's a massive decision. So, well, best of luck for the future, mate. And thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thank you. Yeah, wing it somewhere else. Taylor McKenzie there. I wonder what he will be doing next year. Because I guess if Taz is in World Superbikes, the smart money seems to be on Go 11 switching to Yamaha. Although I've also heard Carrick Isulo linked with that team this weekend, possibly on a Ducati. So let's see what happens there. But whatever Taz is on and whichever team it is, James, if he's in World Supers, you would imagine Taylor will be potentially going around the world with him as his right-hand man. He does a lot of stuff on YouTube. He's done some TV commentary here with us at Eurosport on World Endurance. Taylor is going to be around, you know, from a media side, from a PR side, I think, for many a year to come, isn't he?
That'd be nice. Because also it'd take a little bit of pressure off Niall as well, his dad, to, you know, once you, it's like Troy Bayliss's son, he's coming through the ranks as well. And, you know, can you imagine like having to up ship again and then, you know, go from Australia to start again the championships in Europe? The Australians and the Americans and everybody further afield, they can't nip back and forth. You know, if now McKenzie wants to kind of follow Taz around, he can and get back home pretty frequently when it comes to a World Superbike Championship. But if Taylor kind of retires and is his right-hand man, that maybe take a little bit of pressure off their dad to let them kind of go and do their thing. And it'd be lovely, wouldn't it, to have your brother. As long as Taylor's going to be okay just supporting his brother and not doing it anymore, because it's difficult to go back to civilization after being a racer. So to go back to civilization that he's going to do now and then just be at the side of his brother, still doing what he loves doing at world level, it's not going to be an easy journey, but the love that they've got for each other is apparent, as you can see on TV. So I hope that Taz does get rewarded for being a British Superbike champion. Come here in World Superbikes. We've seen with Scott Redding, that usually works out. We've seen with Troy Bayliss. We've seen with Neil Hodgson.
Alex Lowes.
The British Superbike champions usually do pretty well at this level. So I'm looking forward to seeing him here, and hopefully he can get a ride.
Yeah, and certainly for a rider who used to race in the BSB paddock, who went on to win 6 World Championships, Jonathan Rain. Can he make it 7, I wonder, in 5 weeks' time? But let's just wrap up our BSB coverage, first of all. Tristan's been really busy grabbing interviews at Brands Hatch. Back to you.
So here with Jack Nixon. Jack, going into the weekend, it was, I think, 13 points between it. Had a technical problem yesterday and it was all square today. So it was just whoever went out there and beat. It was between you and Talbot. Whoever beat came out in front, came out with the championship. What was your thoughts going into it?
Well, my thoughts are obviously I knew what I had to do. It made it simple. Whereas yesterday I was just trying to be smart and obviously had the engine issue, which is a shame, but definitely made it a bit harder for me. Joe's been really consistent all year, so I knew we would always be there, and I just knew I had to reel off my own laps. I knew I had good pace in the dry, so just stay focused. And to be honest, I wasn't expecting him to come through on the second to last lap there, so it gave me a bit of a fright. But now, just I really dug deep on that last lap and managed to get the job done, so I couldn't be happier.
I mean, just tell us a little bit about what happened overnight, because obviously, you know, your engine wasn't in a good state last night. You had to put a new one in overnight. Just talk us through what happened.
Well, the actual engine did a big end, and my dad's, Keith, all my mechanics, the team, did a really good job to get it done quickly. We got it running on the dyno this morning, so a stressful afternoon to say the least, but massive thanks to them for getting it sorted, because without them, I wouldn't be here right now. I wouldn't be the champion, so I've got to give it up to them. They've been so good all year and always doing things for me, and never really got put a foot wrong, so yeah, thank you to them.
Massive congratulations, mate. What's next?
Thank you, and not entirely sure yet. We have a few options on the table. Just have to evaluate things over the next few weeks, look at what the best route is for me, and we'll go from there. So you'll see me back in the paddock, just not sure where yet.
Perfect, well done, thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect, thanks. Back to you, Greg.
Yeah, well done. That was the National Junior Superstock title then for Jack Nixon. And we were watching that, weren't we, James, here in our commentary box on Saturday. When that engine blew for Nixon, you thought, oh, it could all be over. And the race on Sunday, today as we record this still, is Sunday, of course. Joe Talbot and Nixon were equal on points. I apparently have heard they've not really been on speaking terms after they had a couple of coming togethers at Alton Park. And that was on a knife edge, wasn't it? But great season for Nixon. He's shown great maturity, the way he's been able to pick through. Where do you think someone like a Jack Nixon would aim to go now? Then he's won the junior Superstock title. So I guess it's up to National Superstock, isn't it? Formerly known as Stock 1000. That would seem like the logical move.
Yeah. Yeah, that's normally the route through, unless you show real promise where you get maybe a super sport, British super sport, or world super sport. Sometimes you can move up if you've got that kind of potential there. Superbikes is a bit too much of a jump, obviously, with his age and his experience and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's a Superstock 1000. Why not? Let's get him used to the bigger bikes and on to the elite class in British Superbike.
Right, back to Tristan for one last time. Let's see who he's got this time.
So here with Cam Dawson. Cam, champion, how does it feel?
kind of unrealistic. Like, I wasn't expected to win it that way, with crashing out and then coming back, nerves through the roof, knowing that I could have still won it, and was told to come up the pit lane, and it was well worth it.
I've got Ash Barnes here as well, second in the championship, just about missed out. If you finished the top two in that one, you would could have gone down to the wire in race two, but a good year for you.
Yeah, that's it. I see Cam go down in the first race, and then it was a bit chaotic from there on, and I just tried to keep my head in that restart, because obviously the conditions were sketchy, but I did all I could, and now I'm really happy to finish second.
And Cam as well, watching on the sidelines, what was that like? So surely you would have preferred to have that feeling whilst on the bike.
I would have rather to ride, to be fair. I wasn't as nervous whenever I was riding, just went down the pit lane, watched the TV, and from there it was just watched to the very end.
Thanks a lot again, Trish, for that. Really appreciate it. And nice listening to you and Barry Nutley and you and Neil as well in commentary over the season. There's been some dramatic racing there in the support categories at BSB. Yeah, Cameron Dawson there and Ash Barnes, first and second this year in the junior super sport class. And James, so lucky that there wasn't a really nasty outcome. That multiple crash we saw down at Hawthorns earlier in the weekend. But Cameron Dawson coming through to win that title. Let's see whether he stays in the BSB paddock or goes up to World Supersport 300. There is quite a big jump, though, isn't there, at the moment? I think it's fair to say, between British Junior Supersport and World Supersport 300, because that's where you're joined by a load of fast Spaniards, Italians, and all sorts of other riders. Quite a difference, as it should be, of course. It's the World Championship, but never easy to make that jump, I think it's fair to say.
No, from National Championship to World Championship, It is quite a jump, because most of the kind of European riders, especially the Spanish and Italian, that they've joined that kind of like the Spanish championships, which cover about half a dozen circuits of the international world championships itself. And as a British rider, all you're doing is one or two, Donington or Silverstone, you know, so you're not really learning all of that information. And that's a massive disadvantage when you go to a track that you don't know, unless you're Scott Redding. It's pretty difficult to be competitive, the best in the world. But, you know, especially with the age as well, you know, they haven't been able to get that experience and also the riding against those riders. But to progress, you need to go there as early as you can. So, you know, to be the best, you've got to ride against the best and with the best to see what they're doing so you can learn and progress in your career.
Well, we mentioned all the other champions in the previous podcast when Tristan and I went through all the classes so far. But the other one to be decided at BSB this weekend, of course, was British Supersport. Jack Kennedy coming through to do the honours once again. Many, many congratulations to Jack Kennedy and the team there. A dramatic conclusion once again. Okay, now then we move on to World Superbike. Another barnstorming race this afternoon, race two. How amazing is Jonathan Rea as a rider and Toprak Razgatlioglu, two of the best riders ever in World Superbike history. And we are so fortunate to see them on track at the same time. I wouldn't even say Toprak's at the peak of his career yet, but Jonathan Rea certainly is. They just get better, don't they? It's incredible.
Yeah, all three of them on the three different manufacturers, three different nationalities as such, obviously with Northern Ireland and the Englishman of Scott Redding, the Turkish rider of Toprak, and the amount that they're pushing on here with 28 podiums with Jonathan Rea and Toprak out of, what do you say, 34 races or something?
35
races.
Yeah, I mean, they've only missed, Rea and Toprak have only missed the podium, each of them, in seven races.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Let's just remember how hard they're pushing. And three of those for Toprak weren't even his fault.
Exactly. You know, let's just remind ourselves what he had.
He broke down the
Catalunya, the alternator, Mudguard at Portimao, Gerloff hit him in Assen.
Yeah.
And then obviously Rea's had his crashes, hasn't he? But even so, I mean, it's incredible.
It is. The consistency at that level, pushing at that level, just really showcases what skill that they have. And we've enjoyed watching. I've been absolutely exhausted from just doing the comms and the races. So God knows what it's like.
It is quite exhausting, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, being on the bike. But yeah, Jonathan Rea, Toprak and Scott, this year, they've put a real show on for us. And, it's just been outstanding.
Well, the best reactions are often the initial reactions in Parc Fermé. And all three of them caught up with Anthony, the Lord Nelson, in Parc Fermé at the end of race two earlier on today. Let's listen into the championship top three.
Toprak, it's not the treble that you were looking for, but what a battle that was out with those two guys there. I am again very close to triple, but I try my best in the race. And last three laps, I try every lap, but I feeling the limit. And also I try for second position, but after I say, okay, today third position. And I say also this morning, not easy second race because everybody very stronger. And but I am happy, I'm again podium, and see you in Indonesia. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Toprak. Jonathan, another brilliant battle out there between you three guys, and most importantly, finishing ahead of Toprak here in race two.
Yeah, honestly, the position doesn't really matter so much today. For me, it was more about the feeling on the bike, and I want to thank my team so much, especially Perry, because he never gave up investigating my problems, and this weekend in this race, we found something good. You know, I could feel from the outlap I had a bike to fight with today, and yeah, thanks to all the team. We won't give up, keep working really, really hard, and I enjoyed the race. I enjoyed a lot. I enjoyed being here in Argentina. Thank you to all the fans that came out. It's really, really nice, and thanks to that guy for the fresh beer back there. I'll enjoy another one later.
Thanks, Ollie. Scott, brilliant win here in race two. And we saw the moment you hit the front there, your pace was just unmatchable there.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't feel that great. And in the beginning, there was a lot of fighting. Then Bassani come past and I was like, oh, I don't want to go back more. I tried to come back. Got quite aggressive. You know, I'll show my aggressive side if this what it needs to be. Got to the front and then I gave it all back. And I was like, Scott, stay calm, relax, you got the pace. Then I started to get the rhythm again. I saw they was fighting and I got to the front again and then I didn't make a mistake. And I knew once I got through the first two sectors, I was safe with my pace. And then I just got a really good rhythm, corner after corner. And that was it. The rest was history.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Obviously, the unfortunate thing is Redding's out of the running now, isn't he? He cannot win it at the final round. Coming into this weekend, we were thinking, is he going to get back in the mix? Because it could easily have happened. But that crash at turn one on Saturday blew it, didn't it?
Well, he missed out by 5 points, didn't he? Because obviously 62 points up, he's 66, so he missed out by 5 points. And that crash definitely cost him going to Indonesia with a mathematical chance of winning the Superbike Championship again. Mm.
So we're not going to have a number one on a BMW next year.
We're not going to have a number one on a BMW, that's for sure. That's definitely confirmed. And I can't see, even if it was Jonathan Rea or Scott Redding or Top Rea, I can't see any three of them losing 30 points to each other. So I can't see Top
really?
Rea.
Really? No. Despite the season we've had and some of the twists.
I can't. And if I was to put my money on who definitely wouldn't lose 30 points this year, it would be Top Rea.
Even more than Jonathan Rea.
Who's made the least mistakes this
very
year?
Very true. Although, what about reliability? I'm not trying to put the mockers on here. I'm just having a bit of fun and playing devil's advocate.
But you can't. I mean,
no. You can't assume it's going to break down.
I can have an opinion on what I think of the performance of the riders as the next racer, but it's impossible. And nobody wants it to be decided on a mechanical.
What else do we need to talk about? Scott Redding said to the Eurosport guys, and we discussed it a bit in the commentary, didn't we? The possibility that there may have been some sort of electronic problem, track control dropped out, something like that, at turn one to cause that crash. Now, I said in the commentary, it looked to me as though he'd made a mistake. So if there was a problem, apologies, Scott, from me, certainly, and to Ducati. I don't know, it was a tricky one. It did sound like when he put the throttle on, it went round, didn't it? But could that be a rider error? Or I mean, it's difficult to tell. I mean, surely it could be.
Yeah, of course it can be a rider error, absolutely. But if there was a glitch on the electronics there for the traction control, that's a huge
costly one if that's the case.
You do get launch control on the bikes, you know, with the holds the revs to the maximum torque as you start. And has he gone, because it's only a short distance from the start line to to the first corner, you probably only get to second before you're coming back to first. So has something not engaged with the traction control after the start procedure? That could be a possibility, but
Because on the line, if the traction control had malfunctioned in any way, James, that would have affected the start big time, wouldn't it, surely?
Yeah, but there's no traction control engaged on a start procedure.
No, it's the more launch control, isn't it? So is there any chance he may have switched it off or it had gone off for any reason and
No. The problem is, unless I was literally talking to his electronics engineer to get confirmation, we won't know. But, I think definitely Jonathan Ray underneath him on the inside. Mm. Scott definitely kind of like let off the brakes to make sure he was in the lead of Jonathan going into turn one. He was a little bit wider than usual. And we saw how badly the grip was off the line with that sandstorm on Thursday. So obviously with that amount of lean angle, the first lap of the race, the first corner, the tyre temperature not being at its maximum where you need it to be, all of these factors, if there was a glitch on the traction control, the worst kind of like a combination of things to go wrong.
It was great though, wasn't it, to see how happy Scott was. That was one of his best wins so far, I think, and certainly the happiest I think we've seen him in any World Superbike celebration so far. It was really nice how he threw his boots into the crowd, I thought. There was a bit of an argument, wasn't there, between two members of the general public who were fighting over the first boot he threw into there. So hopefully they've not ripped it in half. Mm. And hopefully the fight's not still going on. The last thing we need is blind, ugly violence, to quote Partridge again. But but I can't remember what I was going to say now.
I'm not surprised. I'm looking forward to what's coming, though.
Yeah, I can't remember. Farmers, to continue quoting him. Anyway, enough of Partridge. What was I going to say?
The performance from him and that race, the best one of the season.
Yeah, I remember what I was going to say. I was going to go back to Friday afternoon and Jonathan Ray.
Ah.
That's proven to be a really costly mistake this weekend, hasn't it? And yes. Jonathan knows it. Obviously, he said it himself.
Yeah, you can't give those two boys, I'm talking about Toprak and Scott, you can't give those two boys any advantages whatsoever. And when he crashed early doors in that session and he missed that... Those laps to get that data, to get that information for then Perarriba to then put the changes to the bike to allow it to do a certain pace on the track.
Yeah.
He didn't allow him to do that until race two.
Yeah.
Because of that incident. If he'd have done those laps, got the data, he might have been able to get that setting, find that setting for race one and the sprint race. But that's how it is.
Quick shout out to Jeffrey Bowes. He floated his way there really with some of the problems ahead of him, but... scored a point in the end in that second race as the former 300 world champion. Shout out to Mikado, who scored a point in the last Superbike race, to the delight of the crowd. James, we can't talk about everyone, obviously, but just two quick questions now about mentality before we sign off. Jason O'Halloran, first of all, how's Jason going to be feeling now? It must be tremendous disappointment. It doesn't feel as fantastic as it is for Taran McKenzie, and he's done everything right. It's also cruel luck, whatever you want to call it, misfortune for Jason after the season he's had to have not won the championship, and he didn't even get second, he ended up third.
Yeah, I remember in 2004 it was a rare occasion where I was in a team where both the riders in the team were going for the championship at the last race, and when one is victorious and one isn't, the team and everybody has to be respectful of the disappointment of the other side of the garage. Yeah. And I'm sure that's what the Yamaha squad, the mechanics, Yamaha squad are doing this evening. They're congratulating Taz as much as they can, but also, they're consoling kind of Jason because of, and also congratulating Jason. What a season he put together.
Incredible.
You know, unfortunately, the last three and four didn't kind of work out, but it wasn't such a disaster where in a season in World Superbikes, it wouldn't have cost him the championship, but that's how the rules are. You know, the last few races in British Superbike are as they are with the rules, and you've got to come up with the goods in those last three, and that's what Taran did. But it's a tricky one. If Taz comes to World Superbikes, then that's one out the way for Jason to have a better chance for next year to clinch in that title, though.
Yeah, and well done to Steve Rogers as well, and everybody at McCams Yamaha, just to reiterate that, because they certainly have been the team of the season. There's no doubt about that. Final question then, James. Toprak. What's his mentality now? He's just turned 25, and happy birthday again to Toprak and Locatelli, born on the same day of the same year in October 96. He's turned 25. He's leading the championship by 30 points. He's got a 5-week wait now to go to a track that no one's visited before. It's brand new. It's yet to be raced on. What must he be thinking now? What must his mentality be at this point in history? You've been in that scenario where you're so close to your first world title. How does that feel?
I didn't have as many points as that. I wish I did going into the last race. So it was a bit more nerve-wracking, I think, for me than it would be for him. when you look at the hard facts, mathematically, to lose 30 points against those guys, the only unknown is, like you say, it's a brand new circuit. Yeah. So let's not forget the performance of Bassani this weekend, and also the capabilities and the potential of your Rinaldis and your Vandermarks and
Gerloff, you know, have a strong end. Gerloff, you know, Locatelli.
Locatelli, yeah, exactly. There's every chance that those can be amongst it.
Can so, Honda do something special on a track where no one has any data? You know,
who knows? Absolutely, who knows? So it's because of that. There is a chance that there's a few more guys that can beat you at that particular track. Because if they were going to a familiar track, Toprak, there isn't more than three or four guys capable of beating him in this form.
Right.
Which means it's pretty much impossible, unless he makes a mistake or has a mechanical, to lose those 30 points.
Mm.
But it will be a bit more nervous because of the unknowns. The biggest advantage that elite sports people have against other people is knowledge and experience. But nobody has any of it.
Yeah,
and that's why it's going to be interesting. And that's why he will be a bit more nervous. But still, I'd rather go with a 30-point lead than not.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, I don't like to say this, but even if it did go wrong in the first race and Ray wins, Toprak still leaves the championship, doesn't he? And that's a nice situation to be in. What does Johnny have to do then? Just go out, win all three races and hope Toprak suffers misfortune? What more can he do?
Well, he can't afford just to finish in front of him, that's for sure.
No, he can't, because what it would be five points difference times two for two races. That's 10 plus three, 12. That's 13 in total, yeah. Isn't it? So it would only, yeah.
Nowhere near.
No, so, it wouldn't. It would be, what, 2017 it would be, wouldn't it?
But if Jonathan Ray wins all the races, what that will do is mean that Jonathan Ray's in front of him.
Yeah.
And putting the pressure on him every single corner,
yeah.
Every single lap.
Yeah.
And if Jonathan Ray gets a good setting on that Kawasaki and it suits that track, when Jonathan Ray rides to the best he can ride, and if that Kawasaki works, it ain't going to be easy to keep up with it. And if it ain't going to be easy to keep up with it, there's every chance that there can be a mistake made.
It's going to be incredible, isn't it? Well, have a think about that for the next 4 weeks, because we've got 4 weeks off now. We'll be back with a special preview to Indonesia. We hope it's going to be Indonesia. There's all sorts of talk about Valencia as well, but let's say Indonesia for now. Let's just hope we get a final round. That's the main thing. But let's say Indonesia for now. We'll be back with a special preview podcast for that one on Monday, the 15th of November. And then one more at the end of the Indonesia weekend with either yourself, James, or James Whittam. We still don't quite know for sure what the plan is, do we? I don't know whether you'll be alongside us in the commentary box here or whether it'll be Whit. I don't know whether you'll be in the London studio.
It doesn't clash. I was only kind of scheduled to do the ones that clashed. With British Superbike not starting until June, there's a hell of a lot that clash with World Superbikes and British Superbikes. So it's been a pleasure to be. And I want to thank Eurosport and Discovery for giving me this opportunity with you, Greg. I've massively enjoyed it with you sat here. And, you know, I would be watching motorcycle at World Superbikes at home or wherever at my friends and enjoying it anyway. So to come down here and have the chance to commentate on it, it's been a real pleasure, and I've really enjoyed it.
James, I'm sure we'll hear from you in that podcast preview to Indonesia in 4 weeks time, but yeah, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. There's been a few good laughs along the way. Your humour, by the way, you really do bring something to the production. Just as James Whittam does, of
when
course.
When you get Jack and Vera shoehorned in, if that doesn't make you laugh,
I don't know what does. Exactly. And on that bombshell,
can we have the cat wandering across the fence?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, hey, you watch as well, do you? From Weatherfield. It's goodbye for now. I'll speak to you in 4 weeks. And James, thanks again.
Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.